the best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Our guest this morning, a gentleman, he's been with us before. We haven't spoken to him in quite a while. Let's welcome back to our program, Pastor Clive Dawson. Good morning to you, and welcome to our show. It's nice to have you.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. I saw that you made some comments about our local government elections and what it means for us as a nation. Pretty interesting. Let's begin by getting from you your view about what this local government election has said to us.
Well, what I would say, number one, anytime you have a 30% vote, right? That means 70% of the people approximately did not show interest in the process for whatever reason. So I think the first lesson is that the population needs to be engaged more on what local government is all about. But Satish, my humble opinion is that a lot of people have lost hope in the local government institutions. And they have lost hope in the whole political institution. That's the number one thing that both major and minor parties must understand is that people are losing hope. That's number one. And I think the crime, the violence, the corruption that is not being effectively handled, all right, is those things are really hurting the mindset, the psyche of the population. Now, I don't know. I am hearing that the young people, I just listened to a very popular station there, and they have a question going on the youth involvement. Well, we'll have to get the stats on that, but you have a lot of new people joining the age, you know, the level at which they can vote, the age in which they can vote. My feeling is that those young people, the majority of them, are being turned off. The minority of them are so consumed with trying to get a job, trying to make a living, that they don't really have time to really examine things like the local government reform. Now, I am hearing what the government is saying, that it will redound to the benefit. More money will go into the local government. The highly contentious property tax, the money from that will go towards those things. But you see, they have to do a better job of convicting the individuals, and they have to appear more inclusive. But if you don't appear inclusive, people are saying they're just making promises, and after the election, nothing will change. Now, to my mind, the ruling party has an enormous challenge on their hands, because they made that the critical issue in the elections. And obviously, the majority of the population did not buy into it. In other words, it didn't move those who will not vote at local government elections, the number. And they didn't move them. And it didn't move the new voters, some of the new voters. You have a challenge there, okay? The next thing, I think people are tired and sick of the divisive nature of the politics in the country. They're sick and tired of that. And they are not willing to participate. They feel it's same old, same old. You attack me, I attack you. And as I said in my post, the whole issue of trying to focus on the next election rather than the next generation is what is coming through here. Because already the big talk is who will win 2025, not who will get together, all right, across the board and join forces to solve some of the really nagging problems, provocative problems in the society. Is about the next election and who will win, you know what I mean, and whether or not a new party will take over the governance. Now, that is all very well and good, but facing the plethora of challenges that we have, especially challenges for youth. And I would add the major parties particularly to check on that, because that is worrisome. If you have a lot of young people, yes, you have them waving flags and that kind of thing, but are they themselves, even the flag wavers, going to vote? And the point is, the minority of those at youth population now entering the voting realm, they are just the minority. So you have the intelligentsia among the youth vote who are not really, by and large, my analysis, interested, you know, in what is taking place there. That is serious.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you'll ever get a figure for the 70%. What are the age ranges, yeah, you know, those people?
Pastor Dutton, I need you to speak up. I don't know if there's something wrong with your volume, but you're very, very low. So
all right, let me change my location where I am.
No, I just think you just need to speak up a bit, because I'm hearing you. Yeah, I'm hearing you better when you speak a little louder. That's just it. I think we just, because I have the volume on right up here, and that's as best as we can do. This thing about
all
you,
right. Are you getting me better now?
Yes, I'm hearing you better now.
Right.
This talk about youth voter and youth participation and all that kind of thing. I spoke to someone yesterday who actually worked in a polling division. And this person has worked in this polling division for a long period of time for successive elections. So they're familiar, more or less, with the traffic that would come through the area. And what the individual said to me is that there were some young people who voted for the first time, and that was noteworthy. And there were some very, very elderly people who always vote. But absent was the middle ground. The people in the middle, the middle-aged people, the working class and so on, they did not come out to vote. And out of about 500 eligible people in this polling division, just about 150 people vote. And the 150 people was represented by young, new voters, people who voted for the first time, and by old, not in between. So is our focus misguided as to who is disenchanted and who not coming out to vote? Because the young voter, many times, they engage in the process for one reason only, not because they want to make a difference or not because they are aware of the issues. They just want to participate in a process they've never participated in before. So it's exciting for them to go and cast a ballot and that kind of thing. But when it comes to identifying the real problem we have with who this 70% represents, are we looking in the wrong direction? Or are there numerous directions that we need to look into? And for the fact that somebody, one of the callers this morning made an interesting point, suggesting that, well, why should people come out to vote if they believe that their voting will make a difference, their party ain't gonna win, and even if their party win, it wouldn't make a difference to the overall governance structure and all those things. So what are some of the reasons that you think people wouldn't go out to vote?
All right. Normally, the local government, there's a reason. One of the reasons I will postulate today, and I would like to hear your response and the response of your callers to it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't appear to me that local government reps who do well graduate to becoming members of parliament. Now, it seems that local government, right, somehow is disengaged from central government. So that if you like the party and they interview you and they feel you bring some value to the party, then you will get picked as a local government representative. But I'm calling upon UWE Political Science Department and UTT and USC and all those tertiary level institutions that are political science faculties to find out what is the level of upward mobility from local government to central government. So I think that will help us immensely, because I think there are very few people who get chosen if they perform very, very well at the local government level, that they get chosen to operate, get a chance to become a member of parliament. I think the other thing is that the politics seems very corrupt when it comes to choosing individuals. I'll tell you what I mean. a member of parliament in the sitting parliament, you hear me? A member that sit in parliament told me he was disaffected with his leader. I asked him why. He said it was a decision taken by the central governance of that group, that party. And there was a protest organized that he did not agree with at all. Right? Morally and ethically, he could not agree with the protest. He felt it was sending a wrong signal that the party is supporting people who lack, you know, integrity. I know of that case very well. And I went to that constituency. They were having a career guidance program. And I met the parliamentarian there. And he said, Pastor, you wouldn't believe. I took a stand on a moral issue. He said, you wouldn't believe the pressure I got. He said, I almost did not get, you know, chosen to represent my constituency again. And this is a fabulous member of parliament who works hard on the ground, who is well known, who is well respected. So when things like that happen, it sends some of the wrong signals. So I am, and then there's this whole issue of how do you get chosen to be in a safe seat? Somebody gave me a piece of information on the opposite side. Not the party I'm just speaking about. On the other side, all right? The party I'm speaking about just now was the opposition. Now I come to the governor, the ruling party. And I understand sometimes millions of dollars are spent that guarantee a safe seat. So you have to have heavy connections. You have to be well positioned in order to get some of these safe seats. Now, until we can address some of those issues, all right, then we're in trouble. It means that you could almost buy a safe seat, for example. And unless you are well connected and the leader likes you or loves you, you are in real trouble. Now, I am not hearing a lot of the, I have listened to a lot of the political scientists talk. I listened last night to the Dr. Mohammed. He spoke a lot about the attitude of the PM and the approach of the opposition party. And he saw deficiencies in both. What he was in fact saying is that their present approach and philosophy will not ignite, all right, the base, their own base and the base of the country in terms of getting interested and thinking, well, this thing will make a difference in my life. Now, by the way, Satish, let me tell you something. People vote, all right, for a number of reasons. But the major reason is that if they vote, they think it will make a difference in their lives. They will benefit somehow. And if people feel there are no benefits coming to them, then you have a problem there. The last point I want to raise with you is we saw some last-minute moves, all right, in the issue of, you know, like a last dash to attract the voters. On the government side, you saw lands being given out, I believe, to petroleum workers. There were promises made to assist those who, you know, victims in the coup, et cetera, et cetera. All right? And then we saw on the opposition side, with a month, a short period of time, Jack coming on the scene, Gary Griffith coming on the scene, and I have heard from some individuals that they weren't even aware. They belong to the party, they are party card holders, and the dialogue did not include them to make that decision. So I am saying it appears to me that within the individual parties themselves, there's a lack of dialogue, all right? And people who support these parties hear about things suddenly. There's no proper consensus. That's what I'm searching for. That, you know, it's taken among party faithfuls, and therefore they are dropping out. They might still maintain their party card, but they're saying this thing ain't really working for me, so I ain't going to vote. I am saying to all the parties involved, but especially the two major parties, I am saying to them that you need to engage your supporters in a more constructive and innovative manner. You need to listen to them. They must feel that what they say make a difference. They must feel that the opinions are valued by the leaders. And they mustn't feel that there's a hierarchy that is running the party because of their financial status, because of their popularity, etc. They mustn't feel that way. All right? So they don't matter. They are less than. And to my mind, a lot of people didn't vote in the election, 70%, because they feel they are less than, and their opinions and local government election results really do not matter. They feel that way. How you get rid of that is to increase, you know, the social scientists say that there must be, before there's decision make, before there's imposition, there must be consultation. Social scientists say that all the time. Before there's imposition, there must be consultation. There must be dialogue. There must be consensus. And if you don't have that, then you're going to see what happened Monday happening again.
Yeah. Let's take some calls and get the view of our listeners on what you've just said about our politics and some of those things that you've highlighted. 627-3223, 625-2257, and of course your WhatsApp messages. Keep sending those to 3061065. Our special guest this morning, Pastor Clive Dutton. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish, and good morning to Pastor Dutton. Satish, permission to speak freely, please. Pastor Dutton, I want to ask you this question. The man outside on the ground, does he have reason to have faith in our system of politics? When you vote for people, you expect them to go to the parliament and pass good laws for the betterment of the country, and they don't. Now, you have a situation where the political leader of the UNC stands up and tells you boldfacedly, I do not want any vetted police officers in this country. Is that a very serious comment? Can that be equated to crime is not taking place on the sea, taking place on land, we don't need any OPPs? The UNC's way in which they conduct themselves in this country has this country in the national security mess that it is in. Because you need transformational change in order to treat with the security situation in this country. And unless you go to the parliament and you pass laws to ensure that you can robustly tackle the situation, you cannot get anywhere. Trinidad and Tobago is a nation of laws. The minister cannot break the law. He cannot say, policeman, I have to polygraph you. No, he can't do that. Right? So at the end of the day, if we don't get polygraph legislation, if we don't get whistleblower legislation, if we don't get legislation to create another body like the FBI, which is the SAUTT, like Mr. Manning created, how can we go anywhere? So the man on the ground have a right to be losing faith. And if he continues to lose faith, I am predicting one day there's going to be an election, and a Duarte will come here, and we're going to elect him, and that is going to be the end of our country. I listen to your comment.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call, Pastor Dutton.
Can I respond?
Yeah, sure.
I think we have to be very careful. What the caller said, a lot of what the caller said makes sense, and it comes to the issue of both parties getting together to frame effective laws for the governance of the country.
Okay, Pastor Dutton, I'm going to need you to speak up a bit again. The volume has dropped once more.
Okay, yeah, I think I'm having internet problems. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I'm hearing you better now.
Right. Now, what I'm saying is the vetted unit, I have concerns about that because you have the Professional Standards Bureau, you have the CTA, so that you have to make greater use of them. I have gone on record as saying, and this is not to say that what the caller is saying, I'm saying, I'm just responding to two issues. I believe that essentially, all right, the two parties have to do better coming together. And that includes the opposition, okay? In terms of vetted units, I have my concerns because I believe that you already have bodies that have to work. Let me tell you my opinion on where the police service is at this time. It appears to me that we are in the country more concerned about protecting the corrupt from the just than the just from the corrupt. So if with the laws that you have, you're not using them and your detection rate, because you see, before you arrest somebody, all right, to get your detection rate going, you have to arrest individuals, all right? I have my concerns about known assassins in communities who are not being arrested, who are not being charged. And I have cases I have been involved in trying to protect people, And in two of those instances, the people I was trying to protect were shot and killed. I'm not a police officer. I'm just a concerned citizen and pastor, you know, that has a heart for individuals who are victims of injustice. So that some of what Nicola is saying is true, and I endorse it. But I'm also saying that when you pass a bill, you must have the will to implement. And what I have seen in the parliament, we pass bills sometimes, but don't have the will to implement what we pass.
No.
So that has got to be looked at seriously.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Pastor Satish. Because I'm not
morning, morning.
As time goes by, things change. And in my opinion, the laws that they want to change in parliament, but not for all our refer to, must be started in the voting machine. Not in parliament. When you're reaching in parliament, your voting machine must tells you that you have changed the government of the day, who cannot get anything done by themselves and keep blaming the opposition and begging the opposition to support this and support that. And when you get the bill, you still can't bring it forward. So start with to change it in the voting machine and place people who are capable of doing things. Remember, Ramesh Lawrence Maharaj as Attorney General and Basudev Pandey as Prime Minister and the other partnership, how they had things done. That is where we have to change it. Not in Parliament. When you reach in Parliament, half of it must already be done. Thank you very much for your call.
Okay, I guess you're going to look up before you respond. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, yes, good morning, Satish, and the Honourable Pastor Dutting, and Honourable Gentleman.
Good morning, good morning.
How do you unite our country? One section is about the rule of law, and the people must control the government. That one. The other party is about party paramountcy and hegemony, where the government must control the people. How can we meet to find a common ground? I'd like to answer the question, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pastor Dutton, your responses.
Well, the issue of common ground is what I think should dominate the discussion and the politics going forward. The issue of common ground and the issue about being genuine. I am suggesting to both major parties that you will not lose support if you see value in coming together, you know, bringing minds and hearts together and making a difference. You will not lose. It appears to me that the politics of Trinidad and Tobago, the present practice of politics in Trinidad and Tobago, sends the signal that if I cooperate with you, I will lose ground. And the other side will gain ground. So you see, that is something that both major parties have to look at minority parties coming up to. I always say, Satish, and to your listening audience and viewing audience, that my problem is this with this society is that we don't see value in uniting. So that is what I want to see, okay? And sometimes the politicians are talking unity, but they're at a very cosmetic level, all right? Now, look at what happened with procurement legislation. That thing, I was in the parliament as an acting independent senator for like 2 years, acting on different times, but other people could make it. And I'm telling you, that was a great disappointment. A greater disappointment is the inability of the state to bring forward effective campaign finance regulation control. Campaign financing, Karen Teixeira said it well, all right, that a lot of drug lords contribute to our major parties, all right? Now, that must be worrisome to the population at large. And I am not sure that her criticism and her analysis, all right, when she dealt with the need for campaign finance, meaningful campaign finance reform, I am not sure that folks have responded effectively and truthfully to that. So when you have citizens talking about, especially if there's no serve at the level that she served at, and you're not getting any effective responses, people withdraw from the process. And what we have in Trinidad and Tobago, people are withdrawing from the process. And it will take a lot of work and a lot of change and transformation, not just of passing laws, but how you utilize the present laws that you have. It will take a lot of energy on the part of the major and minor parties to show that they will do things differently in the future. All right? Otherwise, the next local government election will even have less people participating. But when you have that, anarchy is at the door. Anarchy is at the door. And Satish, I want us to look at the issue of the assassination of the vice president of Ecuador. All right? Not the vice president, a presidential candidate, Villa Baby CNCU. All right? I want us to look at that carefully. Because when you read the history of some of those areas in Ecuador, you almost see in Trinidad and Tobago the issue of corruption in your police service and prison service. All right? The issue of the collapse of institutions that should function and redound to the benefit of the citizens. All right? All of that, the issue of untouchables. When you compare Ecuador and Colombia and Mexico and Trinidad and Jamaica, you are seeing some stark similarities. So I am saying that we mustn't, you know, hide ourselves in a cocoon and think that these things are not happening here. They are happening here. And when I talk about known assassins roaming the streets in Trinidad and have connections with the law, all right, and therefore that's why they're not being touched, that's a serious comment I am making. And that should not be taken lightly. That deserves a swift and solid response and a pledge to do better. All right, that is important. You cannot have people saying the state running the mafia and the mafia running the state. I mean, I have said that also. And what I'm saying here is very, very serious. Let me tell you how rough this thing is. I made a post, not this last post, but the post before. And a very qualified IT specialist came to my office yesterday, as recent as yesterday. You know what she told me? She said, Pastor, let me tell you something. I want to support you on Facebook with some of the things on the post, but I'm scared I'll be victimized. I'm scared my life will be in danger. So I cannot respond. She came to my office. She's an IT specialist. And she ain't rooting for no particular party. She says, I'm scared to respond to what you are saying. Now, if that is the thinking of your population, how will you expect to motivate them to come out and vote? All right? They are seeing you on the side of the negative elements in the society, not on mainstream. And that is something we have got to look at and do better quickly if we are to save the nation of Trinidad and Tobago.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning, Satish. A pleasant good morning, Trinidad and Tobago. Satish, I'm driving through the bush here in Tamana, going to San Randy to participate in the recount. So if we lose the contact, please forgive me. Pastor, a pleasant good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Pretty good, yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. I heard you make a couple statements, and firstly, I want to make my comment on it. I will tell you, because I am on the ground, and due to my profession, I am involved with a lot of people, vulnerable and so on. And many people do not care about who is in government. So that's a huge chunk of the population. And I'll tell you why I'm sure of that. People need help. And then you ask them, who is your counselor? They don't know. Who is your MP? They don't know, and so on. So many people living, they don't care. That accounts for a huge number of the population who do not vote. And that has been so from ever since. There are people who tell you, well, politicians don't do anything for me. Well, I don't know who build road for them and who give them electricity and so on. But they do not consider these things. Politicians cannot do everything. But they expect any problem they have, that the politician should deal with. So that is one of the areas I wanted to cover. The second thing is that Eric made a point, and Pastor, you said that it had some merit in it, which I beg to disagree, and I'm saying that the PNM only understands one way and no other ways. When Kamala Prasad Bisesa comments on something, she look at all sides of the coin. Like, take for instance, Pastor, you mentioned about corruption in the police service, right? So when laws are made, you have to protect other people other than what it is intended to be. And these are the reasons that sometimes the opposition does not support certain things.
All right, Karen, thank you so much for your call. Let's give Pasa an opportunity to respond. And to the other callers, try to keep the call short so we can get as many in. Pasa, your take on what was said.
Well, what he said also has value. That's why I said I agreed some of the things that I think Eric said. And I also said there's another, you know, dimension to the whole crisis. Now, I would appeal. I know we are very divided party-wise in this country. And there's that race, religion, class dimension of the politics that we're not dealing with. And until we deal with it, then we are going to be in the same position. But I want to say that I would like the government to be more engaging of the opposition also. All right, the opposition should cooperate where there is value, but I would like to see a greater value. I would like to make a clarion call here that a new attempt should be made by both leaders, Sister Kamala and Dr. Keith, to come together to look at critical issues of the country. And I mentioned one in my recent post as the issue of youth. I mentioned two, the issue of youth, saving our youth, and they need to be saved. They are facing challenges. One of them is unemployment, and don't negate that, all right? And the other is the issue of integrity in our politics. And it appears to me that both sides must come together, all right, quickly. Because if you don't have that, you will never be able to move the nation forward. That is important. So if even you start up and say, I'm going to do it because people pushing for it, more of the population. You know what I would like to see come into the politics? The issue of referendum, all right? Having referendums engaged. That is something that we need to put into the political stream. And I understand, I could be wrong, that for that to take place, a law will have to be passed. So that we, every now and then, we engage the population how they feel on critical issues. Capital punishment, for example. That could be an example of it, all right? Proportional representation. What do you think about that? I believe the time has come for the issue of a closer look at the issue of proportional representation. We are talking here of igniting the tens of thousands of people, the hundreds of thousands who don't want to vote. I was shocked to know that over a million people can vote in this country now, qualified to vote, and you have 700,000 not wishing to take part. That has to be very serious. So I think having that referendum legislation, so we could have referendum, you know, on a referendum on this whole issue, I think is vitally important. We have to go in that direction. We have no choice if we want to engage the vast number of people. And then the issue of being authentic, all right? The issue of being authentic. For example, I don't feel the Speaker of the House, and this will call for constitutional reform, should belong to any political party, all right? Because she will have that pressure from her own party to go in a certain direction. So that I believe a Speaker of the House and a President of the Senate must be impartial. And if you're not impartial, if you see the opposition have something of value and the government doesn't agree, well, you should rule in favor of the opposition if you find merit, all right, and should not run the risk of being dismissed from your post, all right? That, to my mind, is what has to come out, and come out quickly. All of these things, we can't go on the same way. It is madness to go on the same way and expect a different result. Yeah. It just will not happen.
Yeah. We need to take a couple messages to take us up to news. Pastor Dalton will be with us in the 8 o'clock hour as well to take some more of your calls. The phone's ringing off the hook. And of course, we'll have some more discussions as we continue to look at our governance, the local government elections, some of the messages that we should have received, and some of the lessons that we should have learned moving forward. Minutes after 8, the final hour of our show here this morning. I will be taking you all until 12 noon, filling in for Govan once again. He's out at the National Youth Expo. I'll take some more of your calls. You seem to have lost Pastor Dalton. He did say that he was having some technical issues. We'll see if we have him back on. Let's take some of your calls in the meantime. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish.
Good morning to you.
And good morning to Pastor Dalton. He's still there, right?
He just logged off. Hopefully he'll log back on.
Okay. Well, yeah. I just want to raised the question, and probably Pastor Duffin could come in, but he raised a very, very pertinent and relevant point, this issue of engagement of the population and consensus. Now, Satish, you may know, many years ago in the politics, for example, we used to have what we call cottage meetings, where the politicians, both local and parliamentary and so on, will go out in the communities under somebody's house and speak to 15, 20, 25 persons in every little nook and cranny of this country, where they would explain issues and they'd have all the discussions, and people got an opportunity to really engage and interact with the politicians, the councillors, the MPs, senators, etc., etc. And there was a level of, if you want, synergy, that engagement that Pastor Dutton is talking about. Physically, you see, it's not only about, it includes emotional, but physical interaction and engagement of the population, the supporters, the members, etc., etc. And Satish, you'll be surprised, you should know, that this was such an important thing, especially in rural communities, that when you hear they're having a meeting, people would come out just to participate and meet the representatives and so on. But you find over the last, 10, 15, 20 years, that have been abandoned. We now have what you call media politics, Facebook politics, and you have the bigger meetings and so on in the town centers, which does not really engage. You go there and you listen to what is being said, and when you finish, you dust your pants and you go home. And that does not, in my opinion, properly engage people. And I'm talking here both emotionally and physically. So this is what one of the reasons why you would have people not connected to the politics, to the politicians, and to the issues that would force them or encourage them to come to that point where they feel they have a duty to come out and participate in the electoral process. And I could tell you, for example, the last time a member of parliament, I could talk for Princess Tong, that we had a serious, if you want to say, community meeting where the people or the constituents were invited to some kind of meeting, was when Dr. Reza Mohammed was a member of parliament for Princess Tong between 95 and 2000. I cannot honestly recall any of the other MPs having anything as a meeting to engage the wider community, the residents and so on, to discuss constituency issues and so on and so on. And this is why this is a critical element. We have to engage and bring people into the process. And perhaps one of the ideas could be we could make parliamentary and make it law that a member of parliament must have at least one meeting every 3 months to engage the constituents. That must be law. Because if they're not doing it, then we have to pass legislation to force them to do it. And that could be one way of engaging people and building that connection. And you would have consensus now between the various communities and the member of parliament, etc., etc. So I want to commend Pastor Duffin for the work he is doing, a very good patriotic citizen, and we need many more persons like Pastor Duffin to come and help us. We need help, and I support him. Now that the elections are over, the leader of the opposition and the prime minister should make an effort to meet and sit down and come up with a plan, an emergency plan to rescue this country. We are in real, real trouble here, Satish. And we need leadership here now, and they are in a position to do it. Thank you, Princess Tong.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. Hello, good morning.
Satish, the pastor going with you?
He logged off. I know that he was having some technical problems. Hopefully, he logs back
on. All right. I will say a little. I wanted to talk. You know, my good in the line. But anyhow, the leader of the opposition will talk to anybody. If there's no one here that they want the leader, the opposition, and the prime minister to talk, that man don't talk to nobody who we don't want to talk. Right? First of all, I don't hear any government MPs or senators coming on your show or any one of 106.5. Only opposition people. He does not want that. He don't talk to nobody. you see the election over, I as a citizen, if I want to make an appointment to see, that is a no-no. That man is a kind of selfish. A lot of people know, you know, yeah, when he come on the meeting and on the air, he's talking, all kind of, look what he do yesterday or the day before. Yeah, he called, and I ain't hear no media house it. I talking to him, man, quite don't listen to radio too bad. When all you're not there, I just tune into somewhere. You know what he called one of your opponents? Latrine. Tell me this thing. You go call a human being Latrine. You're a leader of a country, a prime minister. I ain't hear nobody say that. They could have put a man in court for saying that, calling you toilet. Eh? Oh, Lord. Come now to talk to anybody, but this man won't talk to her. He won't talk to nobody. That is one of the problems. This country running on hate. Real hate. That's why I wanted to talk to Pastor Dutton. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for your call. 627-322-3625-2257. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. I was actually hoping to pass some of these on the line. But so I think I want to say this. One of the things Pastor said that resonated with me is the idea of the Speaker of the House not being appointed from the ruling party. Because, of course, in Parliament already, in our constitution, the lower house is dominated. The party that controls the majority support already dominates in terms of the voting power in the lower house. They already have that. So then to give them the control of the speaker as well, to my mind, give them a real undue advantage. And while people may not agree that person could be nominated from the opposition to give the opposition a fair say, maybe an independent person. But to my mind, at least what I've been hearing in the parliament, is that you know, how does a nominated person, somebody nominated for a position, appointed for a position, get to say that a question posed by an elected representative of the people is not valid? To me, that contravenes the idea of democracy. The members of parliament in the lower house were voted by the population to be there. They were elected. People put them there to represent them. And to have an appointee, a political appointee at that, silence them. They have to say irrelevant. So my mind speaks against democracy.
All right.
That's just a thought for me. And I totally support polygraphing public officials, you know. But we had to start with the parliamentarians and the police. The all ministers right. And so, people in the cabinet, I think, let me polygraph them first. Let them lead by example.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your call. Here's the thing. The conduct of business in parliament is governed by standing orders. And standing orders basically are the guidelines by which you do certain things. So when you see that an MP raises a motion and he is told that does not qualify for discussion, it's not because the issue is not an issue that doesn't need to be discussed. It's because under which standing order they raise it is the wrong one. And I am of the opinion, you might be wrong, because I've never been in parliament, I am of the opinion that it is deliberately done. That MPs intentionally file things under the wrong standing order to continue a discussion that, well, there is bias in the House. There may be. We've seen some of the things in the manner in which the House Speaker has silenced others and allowed others and that kind of thing. She could be accused. But since when we have a problem with it? Because that has been the structure ever since we have had a parliament, that the House Speaker has been elected based on the recommendations of the party in power. And because of the construct of the Electoral College and all of that kind of thing, whoever the government of the day one day go get. But since when we realize that we have a problem with it, only because since the PNM in power, since Bridget Anicet George there, we should have had a problem with it a long time ago, since Barindra Sinhalan and Basudev Pandey and our whole laptop nonsense that we had in parliament. They should have raised a red flag back then. But you see, once we stand to benefit, we don't see evil. So you move inside, you bad talk the process when you're in opposition. But when you're going into government, you have no problem. You don't change things. We don't talk about it because, as I said, once you stand to benefit, you really care. Pastor Dutton, nice to have you back with us. We're having a raging discussion now about many different things.
I got in. Well, I took off the thing because I was losing the charge, so I took off the computer. But let me just say that that, to my mind, is a in the process of governance of the country, the role of the speaker. Because you see, if she is not fearless, she or he, they're not fearless and don't mind antagonizing their own party, then a lot could happen. Because I am saying to people, occupy the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House, if you operate in a fearless manner and honest, it will be difficult for your party to move you because people will conclude that you're being victimized because you're impartial. And I see a fear of victimization operating in too many levels of governance in this country. And that is very clear to me, all right? I remember once under this present regime that there was a lot of crime and violence and a question was raised on it, that a matter of urgent, you know, national importance. And the speaker said no, does not share that view. And I'm sure political affiliates, all right, in the parliament is who was controlling her in terms of that, because it was clear to the average citizen, that fifth standard child, that it was a matter of definite, urgent national importance. So that the character of the people who sit in these positions, you know, will be very important going forward. And I feel if you have meaningful constitutional reform, an independent person, a truly independent person should be appointed. Now we have less and less independent minds in the country, I should tell you.
Yeah, but...
Because... Yes, go ahead.
But we have the Oka Sipol incident about a House Speaker who didn't necessarily side with the administration of the day. And we saw what went on back then. But other than Oka Sipol, And I think there are some people who don't even know who Oka Sipol is. They don't even remember what transpired back then.
Yes.
But since Oka Sipol, has any House Speaker acted in a manner that we can say was resembling anything close to independent? And how do you get an independent person when they are appointed by the party that's in power? Really and truly, they will always be emboldened to their party. Someone in come, Bridget Anastasia George was a government minister. She was an attorney general. She was an attorney general. So to expect her to be impartial, plain smart with stupidness, you're naive from here to high heavens. And all House Speakers come with some level of political patronage, one way or the other. But who's going to change that system? Who is going to go to the parliament with a majority large enough, if they get one, because I don't ever think we might get a large majority, that kind that you could act on your own.
Yes.
But so how do we change it? It has to be
through the processor, but I believe it can be changed. If we have meaningful constitutional reform, it can be changed.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, hello, good morning, Satish. 2 points that were raised by the pastor that I took note of. One is that the decisions taken by a party leader must reflect the opinion of the membership and the rank and file, Satish. And not every decision you make, you know, you could go to everybody and ask them if they're in favor of it. But by and large, when you make a decision, it should be on the basis of consensus. And you consult with the widest possible cross-section of your membership and make sure that even though you're the leader, the decision that you make, you make it on the basis that, you know, it is the opinion of the majority, so you to avoid any discontent going down the road. And secondly, that matter that he raised of persons getting through to represent certain areas on the basis of their relationship with the leadership, or worse again, their relationship with the leader, that is something that it needs to be looked at and it needs to be corrected, because you know, you have the screening committee there. And if the person gets the nod of approval because of they in good standing with the leader or the leadership, then that basically negates the role of the screening committee, which is there to ensure that whoever goes up, whoever represents the party and by extension the people, is a person who is qualified in all respects and all regards, Satish. And if you are able to circumvent that process, then you are effectively nullifying the purpose for which it is here. Thank you, Satish.
Thank you so much, Pastor Dawson, your comments.
Yes, well, I want to state quite clearly, and I have something to say that just came over the media, but I want to say that I totally agree. If a party, and you're quite right, Satish, we need to change a lot of stuff. Because if a party screening committee is only reflecting the views of the leader, we have a problem. You will never have independent thinkers within a party, all right, who are moving up, who will graduate from their present position. If that continues, and I am seeing elements of that in both major parties, all right, so that, I mean, it is boiling on too, from what I'm hearing, Satish, of lifestyle too. If the party leader agrees with your lifestyle, if you don't agree with the party leader's lifestyle, you cannot get elected. Now, that is horrendous. And I want to speak out against that this morning. Let me just tell you what came across on the media just now. One of the stations ran a poll. Do you think enough young people are involved? 42% said yes, and 58% said no. So obviously, there's a thinking by a lot of people that we need to do more, be more proactive and honest and authentic in terms of engaging youth in the whole process. Okay? That just came across.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Morning again, Pastor Dutton and Satish. Just want to get back to the situation of the vetting of police officers, because I think it is crucial with dealing with the criminal elements in this country. While Pastor Dutton had his concerns about a vetted unit, at the same point in time, he complained that there were certain criminal elements and he wondered why the police was not arresting them. I believe Pastor Dutton simply this, that an individual was not born a police officer and he doesn't have to be a police officer. He could go and become an astronaut, he could become a doctor, an actuary, he could become anything else. He doesn't have to be a police officer if you don't fit the bill. In my view, I ensure that I vet you thoroughly. You can't be a police officer who's a married man. You have a deputy in South, one in Central, and one in North, and you have to feed them when the month comes. You might end up borrowing money from the wrong people and owing them and all of that. And when these things happen and these police officers are compromised, you, Pastor Dutton, will come on here and complain. I don't understand why the police are arresting these people and they know they're there. So we need a vetted unit. We need to bring back the SAUTT, put vetted officers in there and let them treat with the high criminal elements in this country. Because if we don't have a sanitized unit dealing with it, we are going to get nowhere. I listen to
your my friend, can I engage you a minute?
Yeah, Eric? Yeah, he gone. He want to stay on the line to have no conversation this morning. Because I wanted to ask him, you see this thing about this vetted unit and this separate police and bringing back SWAT and all that kind of thing? When Patrick Manning had SWAT, crime was at its highest levels in this country, you know, at that point in time. And SWAT made absolutely no difference to the crime-fighting landscape. To the point where that was one of the major criticisms against that unit. At that point in time, people were questioning their relevance. People were questioning their effectiveness. People were questioning the spend that taxpayers were spending on SWAT at the point in time and whether we were getting value for money. Yes, Pastor.
Satish, can I make a point?
Sure, go right ahead.
You remember Clint Huggins was part of a witness police protection program.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he left because he felt unsafe, ended up being burnt. Partially burned and placed in the back of a trunk.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to remember that because some people have a short memory. Now, I am saying, I am not intrinsically opposed to a vetted unit, you know, but those guys have to be among the best. They have to be protected. And one of the pluses I see coming out of it, you know, although I have my concerns, because you don't want people who corrupt end up on the vetted unit too, who have connections with people, corrupt cops. All right? One of the I see where the U.S. is heavily involved in recommending this. And to my mind, given the level of corruption, the intense level of corruption in the country, you're going to have some foreign element, dimension, involved in the protection of those guys in the vetted unit, because we are going to depend on them to do what nobody else has really attempted to do in a significant way.
Mm.
So if you give them a kind of, you know, it's like giving the responsibility of many to a few. All right, and that is going to have a level of endangerment in terms of that. So I'm just saying, putting that caveat there, that you have to ensure that you have honest people, number one, and they are well protected, number two. Okay?
Yeah. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Satish, again, and Honorable Pastor Dutton. Pastor Dutton, I'd like to hear comments on the role of the finances in the party, of the party. Would you like to comment on the role of the finances in the parties? Thank you.
Well, I think that is one of the areas that requires courage on behalf of both leaders, because you have two dimensions here. At the very top, you have the financiers, and the number two, you have the mouthpieces within the party. All right? So the mouthpieces in the party will be the ones protecting them. Now, you recall there has been a rumor of human trafficking going on, all right, where certain parliamentarians were named. One, and the issue of the gang culture, all right, where certain parliamentarians, the names weren't mentioned, were fingered in the whole process. Now, party financiers are the ones controlling the party. Let's be quite honest. Millions of this last election, it looked like a general election campaign, and millions were spent. Where did the millions come from? That's a question we have to ask, especially the two leading political parties and some of the minor ones that may have a lot to offer. They don't have the kind of financing to lift your marketing profile. And if you don't have that, you're going to stay being where you are for a long time until you die. All right? So that is it. So the party financing is critical. What is even more critical? The party financiers who are lavishing resources on the parties, where are they getting their funds from? Is it true? Legitimate business exercise? Well, we'll have no problem with that. But is it through illegal activities? That is the whole issue. Why we want procurement legislation, not watered-down legislation, but solid legislation. And the issue of campaign finance reform is about ensuring that dirty money is not laundered through the political process. All right? So that I am saying any call to deal with that, I would welcome, and I hope more of the population would get involved in that.
Let's take another call. 627-322-3625-2257. Hello, good morning.
Good morning again, gentlemen. Satish, you know I am not afraid of talk. I mean, if you want to talk to me, I am here.
No, you...
Somebody was asking me a question.
All I just say is you hang up, Pastor Dutton, wanted to engage
you. No, I don't hang up. I listen to Pastor
Dutton. I want to engage you a minute, Eric.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm listening.
Yes, I was just saying, if you remember the issue of Clint Huggins.
Definitely.
He was in the
yesterday
program. Yes, and what?
Listen. Clint Huggins was in protective custody, but maybe he should not have been, because he still wanted a party, and he was trusting people who he should not have trusted, and because of that, they got payments. They are sure that he was assassinated, and he was. But the point I want to make to you is this, Pastor Dutton, that if it is that we have police officers who we cannot trust, just one, it could destroy the good work of all. Remember, now, right. I have to take the Prime Minister at his word, save or accept something come out that say that he does not speak the truth. The Prime Minister said that a police commissioner told him that they went on a raid. And as they go on the raid, the people for phone ring. So the person took it up and said, hello, you hear a police officer on your line, say, they're coming. He said, well, we reach. No, the point I want to make is this part of the thing. If not a vetted unit, then what? Then what?
No.
Then we have no hope. We must be able to find a few good men who would save this country, who are willing to put their life on the line to save this country. Because let me tell you something. We are not far from Haiti, you know.
Yes, okay? I agree that. But Eric, good. Let me rush in a minute.
Yes.
I was just saying that you convinced me. But what I'm saying is that we have to make sure that those folks who, well, agreed to be in that unit, we are asking of them a particular, we're giving them a responsibility that is awesome, that is frightening, and therefore we have to make sure as best as we could that they are properly protected. That's the point.
Yes, I would agree with you that 1,000%. Okay?
All right. Thank you so much for your call.
All right.
Pastor Dutton, you raised an issue that in this country we've pussyfooted around a lot. We don't really like to talk about directly for whatever reason. And that's the issue of political parties and where they get their financing from. We had some discussions recently with some people who were involved in politics, and they made some remarks about the banking sector and political parties that's cause for concern about how political parties yes. have to structure their banking and the kinds of checks and balances on those accounts. The reason why I'm bringing Karen Nunes to Shera, and there's a elephant in the room that apparently it worries me that mainstream media and all these investigative reporters and journalists and everybody else have not taken greater interest in this. We speak of campaign financing. We speak about the influence of persons financing political parties, possibilities of kickback and the watered-down procurement legislation. Karen Nunes Teixeira asked her party, well, it's not her party anymore. She had asked on this program and on other places as well, what will the PNM tell the nation where it's getting the money to build its headquarters? And she posed the question directly, saying that she will not accept that bake sale and car raffle could bring the kind of money that is needed to build what the PNM is building as its headquarters. Now, do you think that's a legitimate question for the PNM to answer, given the backdrop?
Yes, I think it is a legitimate question that should be answered. My church is not too far from there. I'm on Stanmore Avenue, and there's a massive thing going on there. So that I don't think the answers we have gotten so far from the political functionaries of the ruling party are satisfactory at all. I don't feel so. But you raise a vital point. If she had said that, then therefore agencies that deal with corruption, you know, agencies that deals with ethics, the law, all right, should have taken that. They mustn't just see it. Well, it's politics you're playing. You know, you have made a statement like that, then there should be follow through on that by the security agencies of the country. That's a very, and she was not generally known to be a reckless person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just going off and making wild accusations. She was not seen when she was there. Now, when the Clico thing came up, people felt it was insider trading that she used to get her money. In other words, before it collapsed, she taking her money first.
Right.
And that was what was held against her. But generally, she was not seen as a loose cannon, should I say that. And if she's making that comment, all right, we just see that, but it's internal party politics. We ain't touching that. That is something that should be carried on, carried to a particular conclusion. And we didn't hear any statement that showed that there was an attempt to get to her and to get the information that she had, that she made, because she made some very damning statements in terms of campaign finance, you know, the legislation and how it is being practiced now, the need for reform. Yeah. So I don't know. I could be missing something here, but I have not heard any follow through from any state agency on the comments that she has made.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this. I remember the old Balize House, because I've been there before to cover events for the press briefings on Saturdays and that kind of thing. And when I went across, I had business in the area and just happened to drive by when I saw the size of that structure that's going on there. It's impressive. It really is. It's massive. It's a massive structure that's going on. I spoke to someone who's involved in the construction sector, and he said to me that there is a formula that they use within the industry where they can guesstimate exactly how much any building is going to cost to construct. And I say again that I find it so interesting that we have not had more media attention on this thing. Because of the backdrop of procurement legislation and on the backdrop of, well, kickbacks and possible kickback and who funding this thing, it just goes to show how selective some of us are on the issues that we chose to focus on. Let's, Pastor, we're coming close to the end of our interview. And I know that, well, we started off with local government and we meandered our way through governance issues, which is a big problem in this country. The local government election had the lowest voter turnout, I think, ever or for quite some time. And that voter apathy has been linked to people believing that, number one, well, their vote don't make a difference. And number two, the people in power really don't care about what's going on to deal with it. If we are to look at one or two things that we probably should focus on heading to 2025, or even before 2025, just with governance in general, what are some of those things you think we should be focusing on?
I would go to the box. I am saying that the first thing you have to look at is career choices in the country. The elimination of nepotism, introducing referendum legislation, instituting a discussion on proportional representation, which I am tying to that. I am saying nothing much will happen in the country unless you change the political structure. All right? Why should a party get 86,000 votes and not be represented in any form of parliamentary governance at all? So I'm saying, and then the issue of being authentic, the issue of being genuine. I think I have to mention that value of genuineness that is a lack in the society. I conclude by saying that it's not so much the issue of the bill, but the will to implement the bill. Anytime you give too much responsibility, all right, there's an inequity in terms of sharing of responsibilities. And I refer back to the vetted unit that Eric raised. We have to be very careful, and we have to know that they will need all the support in the world from state agencies, because you could easily shut down and frustrate a vetted unit, like what happened when Scotland Yard came into the country. My understanding was Scotland Yard came into the country after Alcalde Warner deceased and myself gave the report to the president, Noor Hassan Ali, that what happened is that, you know, corrupt forces in the country diverted this Scotland Yard. And so they were frustrated. And it said Scotland Yard failed in two countries in the world in investigations. And what happened to be Trinidad? I mean, that isn't very good for us whatsoever. But as a country, we need to be serious about issues of governance, issues of change, issues of reform. And we have to call upon individuals, you know, who are not holding their weight or blatantly corrupt to get out of the system if we don't mean to change. We also have to call upon political leaders of parties, you know, to be genuine and not support the corrupt and protect the corrupt from the just rather than protecting the just from the corrupt. Now, you are doing the country a disfavor when you operate in that way, when known functionaries that want to operate you because they are friends to you and they grant you favors, that you place them in very critical areas of responsibility just because of their closeness to you and the benefits you receive from them. So God bless. It was a pleasure being on the program, and God bless.
Yeah, it was always, it's always our pleasure to have you, Pastor Dutton. And I'm sure that as we go along, trying to meander through some of the challenges that we have as a nation, we'll speak to you again. Thank you once more for being with
us.
God
bless you.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.